7. Gravity massive. Maul watched the mess hall clearing out. After the other inmates left, he had remained standing against the wall, observing the guards along the upper perimeter as they went about their patrols. He marked their passage along with the servo droids that circulated in and out of the hall along with the other inmates. At first, nothing seemed to have changed. In the glare of the overhead lights, he watched how the guards and the droids and the inmates all interacted, how they moved among one another, observing their patterns. There were places that they moved and stood and waited, and there were gaps, openings in the gallery that led back to the cells, vacancies where no light fell.
He has been known to visit Ventilation Conduit 11AZR.
It smelled like a setup, pure and simple. Yet it might also be the opportunity that he'd been waiting for. Remembering what Coyle had said, Maul felt a sharp wedge of tension pressing low and tight beneath his sternum. A sense of urgency to go forward and assert himself among those who would try to cut him down, to betray him and undermine his mission here. It was what his master would have wanted.
"You'll go in as a criminal,"
Sidious had told him,
"and live among those animals, within the confines of your new identity of a mercenary and assassin, relying only on your own wit and cunning. Not only for the purposes of the mission, but for your very survival. You must assume that every inmate will be looking for an opportunity to stab you in the back at any moment."
Straightening up, Maul took one more look at the mess hall until he found what he was looking for. In his mind, an idea had already begun to take shape. It was primitive, but it would work. Off to his left, a crew of inmates that Coyle had identified as the Gravity Massive, perhaps 6 or 7 in total, headed up by their Nogri and his Nelvanian sidekick, had continued to loiter near the exit, all staring at him intensely. Maul stepped directly toward them. Drawing nearer, he saw all their exposed right arms beginning to tense and flex together, like the individual muscle fibers on a single organism. None of them took a step back.
"Are you Strabo?"
Maul asked. The Nogri didn't flinch.
"Who's asking?"
"The Bone Kings."
Maul glanced back at the other gang on the opposite side of the mess hall.
"They want a meeting."
The inmate's eyes narrowed.
"What?"
"That scum over there." Maul turned and shot a glance across the mess hall to where the Bone Kings were standing on their side, glaring at him more intensely than ever.
"They told me to give you the message."
"What kind of meeting?"
"I don't know," Maul said. "And I don't care."
He locked the Nogri in his glare, defying him to look away.
"They said it's happening in Ventilation Conduit 11AZR.
Turning, he walked away, not bothering to look back. By the time he got to the exit, an inmate from the Bone King's crew, the bearded human that Coyle had identified as Nailhead, was blocking his way. The man was a monster in human form, scars rippling across his forehead, with a sharpened fragment of bone rammed through his nose. There was dried blood in his beard, and his teeth were crooked yellow pegs set at uneven intervals in his mouth.
"Hey, Puke," he said.
Maul stared at him.
"I'm Vasco Nailhead. I run the Bone Kings."
The man allowed a grin to flash across his face.
"Suppose you tell me what you were saying to the Gravity Massive about us back there."
"Ask them yourself,"
Maul said. He started to take a step, and the man's hand stopped him.
I'm asking you.
The man leaned in close enough that Maul could smell the blood in his beard. His breath reeked like an open grave. From the cuff of his short sleeve, something sharp and yellowish-gray gleamed, just barely visible at throat level, ready to slash.
Now, I'm gonna ask again. Real nice. What did you say? Was it about what we'd done to them this morning?
They want a meeting, Maul said.
Is that right?
Nailhead licked his lips.
And just whereabouts did they say this little rendezvous was supposed to take place?
Ventilation conduit 11 AZR.
Maul leaned in close.
Oh, they told me one more thing.
What's that?
They said, get ready to bleed.
Eight. Mute math. The turbo lift opened onto absolute silence. Stepping out, Siddiqui led Vesto Slipher across the data center, full of blinking consoles and cabinets of server racks, whose sweeping, ergonomic curvature filled the entire width of the viewport, overlooking the prison's central docking station. The entire room around them seemed to be holding its breath. Off to her right, Slipher opened his mouth to speak, and then stopped, puzzled, when no sound came out. Siddiqui tilted her chin up, indicating the cross-hatched wedges of acoustical foam running perpendicular to one another, lining the walls and ceiling, absorbing every decibel of ambient noise. The moon nodded in understanding. For a moment, they just stood there, watching the young man at the console going about his work, streaming the previous night's data flow, running diagnostics, making all the fine adjustments that constituted the fabric of his existence here. At last, Siddiqui tapped a switch, and the foam wedges changed angulation ever so slightly, the eerie silence draining away as the data center filled with the buzz and rumble of ambient sound. At once, the whole room seemed to exhale around them with an audible sigh of relief.
Very impressive,
Slipher said when his voice returned.
White noise generators, I presume?
Not entirely. Siddiqui nodded. There's a design component as well. The whole data center is an anechoic chamber.
A soundproofed room?
Both inside and out, she said. Do you know anything about tapered impedance?
I'm afraid it's rather outside my field.
Siddiqui nodded at the walls. Those foam wedges alternate at 90 degrees out of phase with each other. When they're properly aligned, the pyramidical absorbers simulate a continuous change in the dielectric constant. She shook her head. It's all been designed to create what my brother calls an absolute free-field open space of infinite dimension. It literally swallows sound waves.
Your brother?
The moon glanced at the young man, seated in front of the command suite.
He sounds highly intelligent.
He is. She shuddered. Personally, I find it all incredibly creepy.
Ah.
The moon gave his smirk again.
You prefer noise.
Siddiqui shrugged. I prefer reality.
In that, we find ourselves in agreement.
Still, the moon regarded the room with new respect.
You know, for a moment, I couldn't even hear my own heartbeat.
I've never quite gotten used to it. Of course, I'm not the reason it's been installed here. Walking over to the young man in the gray tunic, Siddiqui leaned down to brush her lips against his cheek. Sleep all right? He turned and glanced up at her. An abstracted, childlike smile rising over his face. This silent twin, her own personal ghost, as if she'd only just now wakened him from a pleasant dream. Knowing that the smile wasn't for her didn't make it any less endearing. Siddiqui understood that her brother's first and truest gratification in life had always come from his algorithm. "May I introduce my brother, Dakarai?" Siddiqui said. "Dakarai, this is Vesto Slipher from the IBC. He's come to check up on us and make sure we're not dipping into the till."
"Oh, now, really?" Slipher said. "I'd hardly phrase it that way."
He ventured nearer, approaching the cabinets of data storage and processing units.
"So this is the famous Dakarai Blur. I have heard so much about you, from many trusted sources."
He extended his hand.
"The pleasure's all mine."
Dakarai just gazed at the hand, his expression inscrutable, then turned instead and reached for the white ceramic coffee cup with the stylized CH7 logo emblazoned on the side.
"You'll have to excuse my brother."
Siddiqui watched as he lifted the cup with both hands like a child, bringing it up to his lips.
"He hasn't spoken aloud to anyone in 10 years.
"Really?"
the moon asked.
"Not even you?"
"Not a word, I'm afraid,"
Siddiqui said, gazing down at her brother with what might have been a hint of melancholy. Real or artificial, even she wasn't sure.
"At this point, I don't think I would even recognize the sound of his voice."
Dakarai looked back up at her. Above the rim of the coffee cup, his programmer's eyes shimmered, pale blue and slightly watery, lit from deep within. In the ambient monitor glow, Siddiqui sometimes thought their irises appeared almost liquid crystal gray, like beads of condensation, deeply set in the smooth, pale face, whose high forehead and patrician nose were so strikingly an evocation of her own. Like her, he wore his jet-black hair just slightly shaggy, the chopped bangs tumbling over the brow in an errant simulation of serrated recklessness.
"Not a word in 10 years.
The moon reflected, looking back at Dakarai as if seeing him in an entirely different light.
"Is it a vow of some sort?"
"Nothing so monastic, I don't think,"
Siddiqui said, running her fingers fondly through her brother's hair.
"Dakarai is a connoisseur of soundlessness. The last time we spoke, he told me that he found the silence of the algorithmic certainty to be the closest thing to pure joy that he ever heard. Everything else, including his own voice, is just a distraction."
"I see."
"Math is music," he told me once. "And it's perfect.
So why should we think that we can somehow improve on it with our grunts and howls?"
"Math is music."
The moon reflected, visibly pleased with the phrase.
"Again, we find ourselves uncannily like-minded. And speaking of mathematics,"
he turned back to the consoles,
"I assume that this is where you run the software? The systems that arrange all the fights, correct?"
"That's right," Siddiqui said. "Dakarai wrote all the code himself. After he finished upgrading the Ando Overland pod racing course for the Decilogic clan 5 years ago, he got the idea to create a completely new piece of software."
Seeing Dakarai wince at her choice of words, she corrected herself.
"Excuse me, an algorithm that could analyze all the data from every potential contestant in a closed gladiatorial environment to create the closest and most exciting competitions in the history of galactic pit fighting."
"So," the moon said, leaning in, "from this suite, you can monitor
every aspect of every inmate's behavior," she said. "Yes, that's correct. Everything from weight gain to heart rate to the constantly changing alliances among prisoners and gang allegiances that might factor into the outcome of a bout. The algorithm analyzes all of it and generates 2 sets of inmate numbers for 2 matches every day."
"2?
we're considering adding a third. Siddiqui's eyes flicked back to the monitor screens again, scanning them more carefully. Anything new to report? Dakarai paused, steepled his fingertips on either side of the bridge of his nose, and shook his head. Frowning a little, he tapped in another series of commands, waiting while the data washed up over the screen, and then squinted at what he saw there.
"What is it?"
she asked him. When Dakarai's frown didn't change, Vesto Slipher leaned in, glancing at one of the monitor screens on the far right of the console, where a Zabrak inmate with an array of horns on his head was moving away from the crowd in the gallery, cutting down one of the concourses into the shadows.
"If I'm not mistaken," the moon said, "that's your new champion, is it not?"
"He did win last night, yes."
"Quite spectacularly, if I recall."
Slipher turned to Siddiqui.
"Where is he going?"
"Wherever it is," Siddiqui said, checking her chrono and the most recent data that had just come streaming across to Karai's inflow monitor. "He won't be there long."
"Why not?"
She cast him a wry half-grin.
"You're about to find out."
Nine. Strap hanger.
Strap hanger.
Cutting sideways along the well-lit expanse of the prison's central gallery, Maul glanced up at the ventilation shafts that ran overhead, each one stenciled with call signs and architectural designations. A series of worn letters were fairly visible overhead. VC09AMA. He kept walking, fingertips tracing the beads of condensation from the walls, feeling it growing colder to the touch. The ceiling was sloping downward, the walls closing in as he made his way forward. Air filtration systems, atmospheric reprocessing units with fans the size of starship turbines, roared out their incessant threnody overhead. But the noise wasn't enough to block out the sound of the prison's gallery behind him. In between slabs of machinery, black lenses gleamed, following his every step. When the walkway ended in a T, he turned right, passed by the first corridor, and checked the shaft above him. VC-11-AAR. Closer, then. The big fans had gone quieter, and now Maul could hear his own footsteps echoing down the passageway. He stopped and sniffed the air, smelling stale water and engine lubricant. The cameras could still be watching him here, of course. That didn't matter. If the prison administrative staff wanted to stop him, they could have shut down the concourse in front of him at any time. He moved on, checking the ventilation markings every few meters now. When he reached 11AZR, the walkway intersected with another passage. Maul stopped, turned right, and took three steps until he came across a series of curved steel rungs bolted into the wall leading up to a maintenance hatch. He froze. Behind him, in the direction from which he'd come, something was coming, making a steady pounding noise. Maul held his breath and listened. It sounded like wings. Glancing up, he saw it coming, a black shape flying straight at him down the passageway. He ducked just in time, and it brushed past his face close enough that he felt the oily, musky-smelling slickness of its black feathers against his cheek. Pivoting in midair, the thing flapped its wings, settling itself on an electrical conduit, staring down at him with black and curious eyes. Maul looked up at it. It was a clawbird, almost a half meter high, small for its breed. Maul had seen hollows of them hunting womp rats on Wayland, with claws like vibroblades and a serrated beak that could rip through flesh like butter. But what was a mutated avian species from an outer rim planet doing in a prison? Still staring at him, the clawbird opened its mouth and emitted a harsh, scolding caw. It sounded like laughter. The cry rattled down the length of the corridor. Maul scowled at the thing. It was making too much noise, and he couldn't hear anything else over the din.
"Get out of here," Maul told it. "Go!"
The bird stayed and croaked louder than ever, as if determined to betray Maul's location to anyone in the area. Bending down, he found a loose metal bolt on the floor and pitched it at the bird, sending it upward with a startled croak. It flew away down the passage. In the silence, Maul cocked his head, listening again. Now he could make out what he'd come to hear. Footsteps. Rapid but not panicked, coming faster now. Big by the sound of it, but not clumsy or uncertain. Boots. Authoritative. Maul climbed up the steel rungs toward the ceiling of the shaft. Bracing his feet against an overhanging electrical switchplate, he gripped the edge of the maintenance hatch and drew himself up until he disappeared into the shadows. He kept his body absolutely rigid, every muscle locked in place, staring straight down at the intersection of the two passageways below. Directly below him, a figure emerged into view. The faint glow of equipment illuminated the helmet and face shield, the heavy broadcloth fabric of his uniform rustling as he approached. A guard. Maul found himself staring down at the top of the corrections officer's helmet. From here it was impossible to see his face. Not that it mattered.
"I know you're out there," the CO said, looking from side to side.
His hand was resting on his belt, not on the blaster, but on something else. A flat black console of the Dropbox strapped to his hip, with a green glowing display that Maul couldn't read from this angle.
"Why you looking for Zero?"
Maul gripped the hatch in front of him more tightly, allowing himself one deep breath. A drop of moisture, ice cold and oily, fell from one of the overhead condenser units. It struck the top of his head, rolled down between his horns and off his scalp, and slithered down the side of his face to his chin.
"Zero already knows you're different," the CO was saying. "Heard you're an assassin. Saw you fight. You're not here by accident."
Maul held absolutely still.
"The way he sees it, there's only one reason that somebody like you would come out to the far corner of the galaxy and start asking for him."
The guard continued.
"You came here to kill him. Am I right?"
Maul waited. The CO had stopped looking from side to side now. His eyes were riveted to something straight ahead of him. The droplet fell from Maul's chin and hit the guard's helmet with a soft but audible plop. The CO stiffened, tilted back his head, and looked straight up at Maul, the whites of his eyes reflecting yellowish red in the light spill.
"I thought so," he said. "You know what? I don't even need this blaster to take care of you."
He indicated the drop box strapped to his belt.
"I got your numbers plugged in already, maggot. I touch this button, set off those bombs inside your chest. You're dead before you hit the floor."
"Where's Zero?"
Maul asked.
"You're kidding, right?"
His fingers flickered over the switches of the belt console, and Maul was almost positive that he hadn't yet heard the noises at the far end of the walkway, whispers and footsteps that had become steadily more audible over the past few seconds.
"You actually think he'd let you get the drop on him like this?"
Now the CEO's entire demeanor had changed, developing an edge, losing whatever playfulness it might have had.
"You never had a chance."
"I don't think so,"
Maul said. The distant sounds were clearer now, the whispering no longer bothering to keep itself stealthy, the footsteps no longer muffled. Maul watched as the CEO started to react, the man caught completely by surprise by what was happening, but it was already too late. A storm of stomping feet came thundering down through the passage, an avalanche of noise clanging off the metal and shaking the length of the corridor from end to end. From either side of the walkway below, the sudden roar of inmates' voices filled the closed space with howls and bellows of rage.
What?
The guard swiveled around, not sure where to look first. They hit him from both sides at once. From where he was positioned overhead, Maul had a perfect view of the carnage below. A wall of bald human inmates burst forward, the Bone Kings barreling down one end of the walkway, while a second mass of bodies, the Gravity Massive, led by the Nogri Strabo, came stampeding from the opposite direction to meet their enemies head-on. The guard disappeared between them, immediately trampled underfoot. Maul waited, timing his response to an internal clock whose nuances were a matter of pure reflex. The prisoners were already screaming. In the closed space above, he heard bones snap, the brittle crunch and crackle of cartilage being crushed, bodies flattened underfoot. Now, hanging by his legs, extending both arms just above the battle, Maul thrust both hands down into the fray. He seized the guard by his helmet strap and yanked him upward, using his helmet like a battering ram to smash open the maintenance hatch and shove the man up inside. Alarms began to beep and wail from all sides. Maul scrambled into the utility shaft alongside the guard, his hand locked around the CO's throat.
"Switch those off,"
he ordered.
"Can't!"
the guard panted.
"It's not!"
Maul pushed the guard back toward the open hatchway.
"Turn them off or I'll throw you down to them. They'll rip you to pieces in a heartbeat."
"I'm telling you I can't! Alarms have to be deactivated by central control! I swear!"
Maul took hold of the man's right hand, pinning it down on the chain coupling where the hatch cover fit into its housing, and slammed the hatch down on it hard. The guard shrieked, his voice shattering as it reached the upper registers.
"Where's Zero?"
Maul asked softly in his ear.
"I don't know!"
The guard's face had gone terribly pale, except for two bright spots of red high up in his cheeks. Tears of pain stood out in his eyes.
"Nobody knows!"
"How can that be? There are cameras everywhere."
"Not on him! He comes and he goes! Even the guards don't see where or how he gets in and out!"
"Then why did the Chatterer fans send me here?"
"I told you! Zero thought you were here to kill him!"
"You tell him that I'm looking for him,"
Maul said.
"You tell him I want a real meeting, not a setup."
"He doesn't work that way!"
"Where's his cell?"
"It's on level 8, cell 22! Around the far corner! You have to look for it, but it's there, I swear! Now please just let me go!"
Maul decoupled the hatch and let it hiss open. The guard groaned, withdrawing his fractured arm with a shuddering whimper, cradling his hand and wrist like a small dead animal dangling limply from his sleeve. Slowly he looked at Maul. Something savage had trickled into his eyes, filling them with rage.
"Inmate 11240,
he said, resting his good hand on the activation stud for the dropbox.
"You're as good as dead, maggot."
Maul studied him.
"We'll see."
The CO hit the button, and nothing happened.